Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Adam Witkov, and I represent Plaintiff Appellant John Schlater. This case is about protecting the commercial efficiency of a transaction by preventing an unlicensed broker from benefiting from his illegal conduct.
I don't really buy that. You know, we have a case, not too old, the Scheiber case, Scheiber versus Dolby Laboratories, in which we said that even in a case, you know, of an unlawful contract, you can still have restitution based on value conferred. So in this case, as far as we know, Schlater received all the value that he would have gotten from a licensed broker. There's no evidence to the contrary. So he got value. Why should he get the windfall of in order to punish LaTeX? Statute doesn't suggest that that's an appropriate punishment. Statute just creates, you know, very small criminal penalties, small fine.
Your Honor, the statute doesn't support necessarily directly state that this is the appropriate remedy, but Wisconsin common law provides it.
And I don't see that. Where's the Wisconsin common law?
Your Honor, if you look to General Split versus PV and Atlas and Hitpolt versus T-shirt, when the parties, the general rule is that a court will not aid a party in to an illegal contract. However, if the parties are not in pari delecto, restitution is available. And that gets to the issue of why we're here.
Restitution for what? I mean, look, the only purpose of restitution in a case like this would be punitive, to take away LaTeX revenues, to punish it beyond the statutory punishment. That's the only basis for it.
Your Honor, the Wisconsin Supreme
no
Court...
No harm to Schlater. So the question is, should restitution be used in a case of this sort as a supplemental punitive remedy to what the statute provides?
No, Your Honor, there's implicit harm by an unlicensed broker.
I don't see the what's implicit harm?
By
there's no harm. There is no evidence of harm. Implicit harm is just baloney.
Your Honor, the court held, the Wisconsin Supreme Court held in Badger Coal that in an instance analogous to this case, where the statute did not provide a civil remedy, where the statute only provided a criminal remedy, the court still held that restitution was available as a remedy. In an instance analogous to this, where there was an illegal contract, but one party was not in pari delicto in that instance. That is the case we have here. The court inappropriately relied on Kemp v. School District of Fredonia, a particeps criminis case.
Where's Badger Coal?
Your Honor, Badger Coal and Koch versus Sterling Midland. It's a Wisconsin 1923 opinion.
And is that in your brief?
Yes, Your Honor. It is in the reply. It was raised as an issue. The appellees requested affirmance based on the entire record, and it addresses an issue that concerns Chapter 452 in response to their argument.
One point that you made is that the defendants breached their duty of loyalty to Mr. Schlater by putting their own interests above his by not making certain disclosures. But those allegations were, it seemed to me, were set forth only in count two, and you didn't appeal the dismissal of that count. So I'm wondering whether those allegations are even before us.
Well, I think they are, Your Honor, because paragraph 13, which is in count two, is a factual allegation. And I think on a motion to dismiss, all facts pled in the complaint should be viewed. And that paragraph 13, that factual allegation, which states while performing brokerage services pursuant to the agreement, LaTeX and LCC placed their interests ahead of Schlater's, that directly relates to count one. And that relates to the policy behind Chapter 452, which is to protect sellers.
But your Schlater doesn't need protection. Nothing happened to him. He's fine.
No, Your Honor, that isn't the case. The fact that he entered into an agreement unknowing, not in pari delicto, not knowing that his broker was unlicensed.
There's no difference. The broker did a perfectly good job.
the alleged person.
Ordinarily, when somebody's seeking an equitable remedy like this, they would be asking the court to undo the transaction, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Can you do that?
No, Your Honor, and that's why Badger Cole, in the light of Badger Cole, this is really a restitution analysis more than a rescission analysis. Because the contract can't be done, but the contract is void ab initio in this case because it's illegal.
That's a conclusion, but that's the we had a decision last year that Judge Rover and I were both involved with, a case called Lady Dies. It arose under Indiana law, but the plaintiff kept the benefits of the contract, but argued that the contract was illegal and was claiming, in essence, unjust enrichment. We said there's nothing remotely unjust about this. Where you ordered the services, you got the services, even if the contract might have been illegal or might have been unenforceable if you had gone to court, we're not going to step in and order repayment without restoration of the benefits.
Your Honor, Chapter 452 doesn't view this as a windfall. Chapter 452
simply says that LaTeX couldn't have gone to court to collect his fee.
Yes, Your Honor.
It doesn't have the other step.
Yes, Your Honor, and that's why there's not a statutory remedy available here. It's a common law one. But the idea that the statute somehow should promote or encourage the mischief that had Mr. Schlater refrained from making payment for 2 years.
It's overkill because, following up on what Judge Hamilton said, the fact that if LaTeX had to sue Schlater for the money would have meant that LaTeX would lose its $700,000. That's a pretty severe sanction, and you don't really need to have a sanction in the form of a additional windfall restitution suit by the happy customer of the illegal broker.
But the fact that Mr. Schlater didn't know the day after the ultimate sale occurred on January 21st that his broker was unlicensed and acting against his interests, he made that payment. Had he known that at that time, clearly he would not have made that payment.
Does Mr. Schlater expect anybody who Googles his name to do business with him in the future after bringing this kind of a lawsuit?
I think yes, Your Honor. I think Mr. LaTeX and LCC is in a position where, under Wisconsin law, Chapter 452.03 says you can't offer yourself up as a broker. You can't provide brokerage services. You can't negotiate sales on behalf of someone if you're not licensed. And
well,
by
actually,
not entitling...
Of course, this is very unclear here because the statute is unclear and this sale of stock may not be what the statute means using the word business. So LaTeX may have made a mistake, but not necessarily a willful mistake. They may have thought this was outside the statute.
But, Your Honor, the willful mistake, as alleged in paragraph 13 of the complaint, is acting against their interests. And clearly in this...
Acting against whose interest?
LaTeX and LCC acted against Mr. Schlater's interest in this transaction.
LaTeX thought that this was an exempt transaction from the statute. Then it wasn't. It made a mistake rather than trying to violate the statute.
But the issue, and as recently as 2006, when addressed by the Eastern District in Bertha, the court held, looking to Nagin in previous cases, that the issue is not simply the ultimate sale. The issue is the brokerage agreement and the actions from the time of the brokerage agreement to that sale.
It's much simpler than this. The statute is unclear in its application to these stock to stock sale. And that being so, we can't really say LaTeX was acting in bad faith. They may just have made a legal error, which is very common.
No, Your Honor,
another reason for not giving Schlater this windfall.
Your Honor, it really isn't a windfall here. The issue
of course it's a windfall. It's a windfall because it's free money. It's not compensation for anything because Schlater had no loss.
Yes, Your Honor, but the claim isn't a claim under the statute. It's a common law restitution claim that Wisconsin
but
provides
in this
instance.
But it's based on the statute because it's the statute that creates the
The statute renders the contract illegal.
You say it renders it illegal. That's arguable. That's why there's no malice involved on the part of LaTeX, as far as we know.
If we set aside the breach of loyalty allegations, then does the complaint support any inference that Mr. Schlueter was harmed by the lack of license?
The complaint would not. If you look to the stipulated facts filed by the party, specifically App 22, paragraph 18, there would be support in that regard.
And what would it be?
Well, the fact that Mr. LaTeX and LCC acted against the interest. Specifically, they sent an email to the opposite side a week before the transaction was done, giving Mr. Schlueter's tell. They gave over information that was essential to protecting him, that a broker licensed under Chapter 452 would have to provide disclosures and have to act in such a way that they would not offend.
But how did it harm him? You see, I can't get to the bottom line here. I cannot understand how he was harmed.
Well, and, Your Honor, we're on a motion to dismiss stage here, too. Later in this case, facts could come up that would arise to the level of harm. The issue is the district court inappropriately dismissed this case by finding the parties.
But you don't think you have to show harm.
No, Your Honor, not for our restitution relief.
And that's the only thing you're pursuing right now.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, so...
Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. Wolkoff. Mr. Ronsky?
Good morning. Thank you, Your Honors. I mean, to cut to the quick, I think you're already there, at least if I can read into the questions. There has to be some kind of claim here. And the only claim that we see is an equitable claim, and I would put equitable in quotes here, claim for restitution or unjust enrichment. And I don't know what the possible factual basis is for that kind of claim here. I mean, there's nothing equitable about the windfall that the plaintiffs want here. The agreement was fully performed by both sides. Mr. Schlueter received the full benefit of his bargain under the brokerage agreement. He was obviously pleased with the transaction, or he wouldn't have signed the agreement, and he wouldn't have closed. So even if you get to the point where restitution is a theoretical remedy here, there's simply no factual basis for it. And these, frankly, vague references to acting against interests and breaches of duty, the district court properly held that those were factually vacuous and, you know, for purposes of Twombly didn't create any plausible entitlement to relief either under counts 2 or 3, and I don't think that you can bootstrap them here to somehow claim that that's where you get into the restitutionary remedy.
The plaintiff has disclaimed reliance on any need to prove harm. Could you address the Badger Coal case that was raised in the reply brief?
Sure. Badger Coal is it's a case, and it relates to a regulation in place at the time where the president could essentially set price controls on the price of coal. And the allegations in the complaint were that the president had done that, that order was effective as of a certain date, and that the vendor of the coal, in order to get around that restriction, backdated certain invoices.
Fakes the dates. So that he can charge an extra 20 cents per ton of coal. And
correct.
The remedy was the restoration of the 20 cents, right?
Yes.
Not the entire, or was it the entire price of the coal?
It was a motion to dismiss. It was on a demurrer, so it just went back. As I read the case, only the 20 cents was an issue. In addition, I think, you know, the fundamental distinction between a case like Badger Coal is, if you look at the cases and even the district court's opinions here, even the district court's opinion here says, look, illegality, if there's some compelling underlying policy reason for us to grant restitution, if it's necessary to enforce the purposes of the statute, well, you know, then we may do that. So in this case, you've got a statute that, you know, was basically a specific intent statute. It was a violation to knowingly evade this presidential freeze on the price of coal. There was an alleged violation of that, and the actual violation was the paying the increased price. I mean, there's a direct nexus between the violation and the whole purpose of the statute. And again, it's a statute that required intent in a criminal statute. So you can say there, the policy of the whole statute would be undermined if you just said, well, no, here we're going to let the parties be where the, you know, leave them where they lie. That really undermined the whole statutory scheme. This is very different. The Wisconsin legislature has made some judgment. I think 452 is less than a model of legislative clarity. But on this point, it is clear, which is the legislature decided that it was a sufficient sanction or incentive to comply with the statute to have, number one, criminal penalties, and number two, to prevent an unlicensed broker from going into court and seeking recovery. And that's what the statute does. It doesn't do what they want to do here. So you fall into, is there
some... Does the statute actually say that the broker, the false broker, can't sue?
Yes, it does. So you fall into the common law. And the common law here, I think there's two strains that I really think are really conceptually one. One strain relates to this issue of illegal contracts. The other is the voluntary payment doctrine.
And you know, this is actually, I think it's sometimes clearer to think about this sort of thing not as... not in terms of the common law, but rather do courts imply remedies for statutory violations beyond the remedies provided in the statutes themselves?
I would agree that that is an appropriate way to look at it, and you know, you get into the whole body of case law about whether the statute, you know, undoes the pre-existing common law, and I think a good argument can be made here that where the legislature passed a specific remedy or a specific sanction that it excluded the others. But even if you fall into the common law, you know, Kempf is a perfect example. It's completely factually analogous to our case. It's a lack of licensure. It's an attempt to recover fees that were paid under a contract that the court presumed was illegal because of the lack of licensure. And the court said there, you know, we are not going to aid either party to an illegal contract absent some really, really compelling reason to do that. And I would say when you look at this bare bones complaint, there are no facts here that suggest any reason, much less a compelling reason, to give Mr. Schlieder this windfall. It's not equitable. It's not restitution. And there's been no unjust enrichment.
I don't see where the statute says that. Maybe it's implicit. I don't see where it actually says that you can't sue for a brokerage fee if you're not a licensed broker.
I can get you that site, Judge, but I don't have it in front of me right now. But I assure you, if it wasn't there, I'd be happy to say that it wasn't. But it is.
Okay. No, you don't have to. We'll look for it. That's fine. Okay.
So if there's no other questions, we're prepared to rest on our briefs.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Rosky. Mr. Witkoff, anything further?
Yes, Your Honor, just one brief point. Judge Posner, you raised the question that it is arguable whether Chapter 452 renders the contract illegal. I think that's exactly why this case needs to be sent back to the district court. The district court inappropriately held the parties were impari delecto based on a partisans criminis case, and it is the district court's need and the parties' desire in this case to determine whether Chapter 452 applies to this agreement. That decision was never made. That's the decision the parties seek.
The parties seek that?
Originally, Your Honor, the reason that stipulated...
I thought the defense was happy to win on any ground.
Well, yes, Your Honor, and clearly they are. But I think the original intent with filing the stipulated facts was to get to the issue of Chapter 452 and its application. And I think that the appropriate measure is to let the district court make that analysis. Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you very much, both counsel.